that to the other side of the coin? Do I remember the words? Sit by my side, come as close as the air, and share in a memory of gray, and wander in my world. Dream about the pictures that I play, of changes, green leaves of summer turn. Then they have to die, trapped within the circle time parade of changes.
Yes. Phil Oakes, one of my favorites. I hope it's one of yours, a protest singer from the 60s, 50s, Vietnam era, for those of you who are around. This is Don Weitz, your anti-psychiatry radio host and producer, and welcome to the November 27th issue edition of Anti-Psychiatry Radio, friends. Well, you know, this... I want to talk a little bit about advocates. I don't think we support or speak out enough on behalf of our brothers and sisters, particularly those who are psychiatric survivors who become advocates and put their health and sometimes lives right on the line. And tonight I'm dedicating this whole show to a friend, an advocate, by the name of Randy Pritchard. Many of you psych survivors, I hope, who are listening, and I hope you do, and even if you're not a psychiatric survivor but a lawyer, a mental health lawyer, you will know, will have heard about Randy. Randy Pritchard unfortunately died at age 56 on October 30th this year. I was at his memorial with about 100 others. Randy inspired a lot of us. He was involved in a number of cases, fighting the review board with other survivors who were victimized by it, victimized by the mental health law. He went to Ottawa, I remember, a few years ago, and was intervening with the mental health legal... He was with the Mental Health Legal Advocacy, which he helped co-found with partner Jennifer Chambers. And that was a victory for the right to refuse forced treatment, particularly psychiatric drugs. That was the famous Scott Starson case. And Randy was involved in Winko. I remember he was involved as an advocate in those cases in British Columbia. Paul Martin Conway, he was involved in that case. They've kept this brother locked up for over 25 years in Oak Ridge. At the memorial, I want to quote this that was kindly sent to me by his partner, Jennifer Chambers. Jennifer, I hope you're listening. Rand, and these are Jennifer's words, and I totally agree with them, of course. Randy was a man who chose to be involved with the world around him, and he did so with astounding insight into what justice means to people that most of the world would just as soon forget. We founded the Mental Health Legal Advocacy Coalition with our stalwart comrades. Randy was the driving force of MHLAC, in its many legal accomplishments, intervening in three successful challenges based on the Charter, Canadian Charter of Rights and Free Freedoms, before the Supreme Court of Canada, acquiring standing and testifying movingly at an inquest, and developing a new legal argument to take before the Supreme Court successfully, following the MHLAC having conducted the only national survey ever done in a particular section of the psychiatric system. Randy raised our consciousness tremendously, made us much more aware of the brutalities going on at Oak Ridge. He was a survivor of Oak Ridge Division of Penetanguishene Mental Health Center in Ontario. It's near Midland, friends. If you've never been there, try to stay out of that place. It's one of the most notorious psycho prisons in Canada. Randy survived a few years of that. And I want to, but before I get into that, I should say that one of Randy's accomplishments was on behalf of Daniel Blay, who was locked up in North Bay Psychiatric Hospital. And Randy gave moving testimony, and the jury accepted his recommendations, that is, at the inquest, for a more humane system, including the recommendation that all psychiatric hospitals in Ontario should accept a Bill of Rights like the one at CAMH, that Center for Addiction and Mental Health. But unfortunately, North Bay Hospital would not adopt the Bill of Rights. They worked on their own version for some reason. Anyway, I want to tell you a little bit about Oak Ridge, some of my comments about it based on my conversations and readings with Randy and other advocates, and my participation during a demonstration back in the early 90s. The Oak Ridge Division of Mental Health of Penetanguishene Mental Health Center is probably the most brutal maximum security psychiatric hospital in Ontario. People sentenced to Oak Ridge rarely get out alive after they've been charged, labeled, and permanently stigmatized, criminally insane, quote, not guilty by reason of insanity, quote, or not criminally responsible or unfit to stand trial. These are very subjective, damning labels that the state imposes on many brothers and sisters here in Ontario and other provinces. Psychiatrists use the more clinical-sounding labels psychopath and sociopath and fraudulently claim they're incurable. The provincial governments warned of the Lieutenant Governor, WLG, authorizes virtually indefinite incarceration in Oak Ridge. People, prisoners are released only at the pleasure of the Lieutenant Governor, frequently after 10 to 20 years of incarceration, sometimes longer. Many hundreds of patients, mainly young men, transferred from prison, are sentenced directly to Oak Ridge, have been severely traumatized, brutally punished. Some activists and critics assert that these psychiatric prisoners are forcibly treated, physically abused, tortured, and warehoused under the euphemisms of treatment and rehabilitation. I've never heard of anybody being cured, healed, or rehabilitated at Oak Ridge, or any other psycho prison for that matter. During the 1960s in Oak Ridge, psychiatrist Elliot Barker carried out horrific medical and psychological experiments on scores of prisoners labeled psychopathic and personality disorder. These experiments can only be compared to those to Dr. Yu and Cameron's diabolical brainwashing experiments in Montreal in the 1950s and early 1960s, theorizing erroneously that failures of communication in psychopaths indicated, quote, sickness or, quote, mental illness, Barker developed high-risk therapy programs that included forcibly drugging his patients with powerful, quote, defense-disrupting drugs such as scopolamine. That's the drug the Nazis used during torture and in interrogations. The powerful hallucinogen LSD, supplied by Health and Welfare Canada at the time, methadrine and other addictive amphetamine drugs. These drugs, like today's neuroleptics and antidepressants, assault the mind and undoubtedly damage the brain. Most of Barker's prisoners were driven mad, quote, psychotic, and suffered terrifying hallucinations. Others were forced to encounter each other while they were stripped naked and languished for days or weeks in the capsule, a small self-contained locked unit where several naked male prisoners were forced to interact with each other during several weeks and forced to drink from immovable straws embedded in the capsule walls. Further, non-psychopathic prisoners were appointed, quote, teacher therapists, forcibly paired and handcuffed with psychopathic or psychotic patients for several hours in group therapy that occurred in the, quote, behavioral therapy unit, BTU, and social therapy unit. In response to growing criticism by former prisoners and a few reporters, psychiatrist Stephen Hucker led an investigation of Oak Ridge. His report, titled Oak Ridge, A Review and Alternative, was published by the Ontario government in 1985. Most of his recommendations, were cosmetic and focused mainly on repairing the physical plant or replacing it with another hospital like Oak Ridge. Significantly, Hucker failed to expose or criticize any staff abuses. 5 years later, in 1991, a study carried out by psychologist Grant Harris involving many of these prisoners so-called treated by psychiatrist Gary Myers, who succeeded Barker in the 70s, showed an alarming 80% recidivism rate. In other words, four out of five prisoners released somehow ended back in Oak Ridge. So much for the treatment. The vast majority reoffended and ended up in federal prisons. Barker's treatment methods were finally exposed as a total failure and publicly criticized as unethical, if not criminal. Unfortunately, Barker was never charged and never lost his medical license. A class action, well, it may not be a class action, but anyway, a lawsuit is launched by some of Barker's former patient prisoners at Oak Ridge is pending. Now, here's what Randy Pritchard, who's survived Oak Ridge, had to say. According to Randy, there are, get this, friends, 150 unmarked graves. I repeat, 150 unmarked graves in the Oak Ridge Cemetery. I wonder what that's part of the cover-up. A fact the hospital administration and mainstream media haven't bothered acknowledging or investigating. Since the 90s, when Randy went public about this, I was at the press conference when he announced this. Abuse, torture, administrative cover-ups, and demands to investigate or close Oak Ridge are major themes that run through numerous, numerous personal accounts and press articles by former prisoners and critics during the last 20 years. On November 16, 1991, my good friend and comrade, anti-psychiatry activist Dr. Bonnie Burstow, and myself wrote to Francis Lankin, former Minister of Health, and Bob Rae's NDP government, urged her to close Oak Ridge. She had the power. These are excerpts of our letter listing six major reasons to close this psycho prison, this dungeon. One, the buildings and cells violated building code and public health standards and had been publicly condemned by several critics, including psychiatrist Stephen Hucker in his 1985 report. Two, the living conditions are inhumane and sometimes life-threatening. Three, the behavior modification abuses are inherently destructive and degrading and violate key sections in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Four, we believe that staff at Oak Ridge have seriously brutalized many inmates and killed or covered up the deaths of many other inmates. Five, the cost of maintaining and staffing Oak Ridge is exorbitant and unjustified. Six, the ongoing nepotism in staffing makes it impossible to truly monitor abuses. I should add, as a parenthetical note, that many townspeople in Penetanguishene work at this cycle prison. For these reasons, we strongly urge you to close Oak Ridge. As Minister of Health, you have the authority to take this responsible and long overdue action. We await your reply. That was excerpts of Dr. Bonnie Burstow's and my letter to Francis Lankin, then NDP Minister of Health. About 1 month later, Lankin replied in a self-serving, evasive letter that included the stalling tactic. She stated, quote, several important improvements have been made, mostly in the physical plant, end quote, and I am aware of allegations of inhumane living conditions and violations of the charter, but she did nothing about them. Lankin suggested that if we have information on murders or other deaths at Oak Ridge, that we should contact the police. However, inaction, cover-ups, and sham investigations by the Ontario Provincial Police, OPP, are a big part of the problem. Duh. Not surprisingly, she stated, quote, the ministry has no plans to close Oak Ridge, close quote, and added she'd asked Penetanguishene Administrator George Kateko to, quote, investigate your concerns about nepotism and report back. That's like asking the police to investigate the police, but we never heard back from Lankin or Kateko. Within the next 3 months, on December 16th, 1991, and February 6, 1992, the Ontario Psychiatric Survivor Alliance, which Randy co-founded with Arit Shimrat, held two press conferences in Queen's Park that exposed several instances of guard brutality, alleged murder, and demands for investigation by the OPP into several deaths of prisoners. The Criminal Investigations Branch of the OPP is currently investigating at least 27 separate alleged incidents of physical and sexual abuse and homicide that occurred at Oak Ridge Division of Penetanguishene Mental Health Center. That was from the Alliance, the former Ontario Psychiatric Survivor Alliance, in its press release. OPP investigations were and still are a whitewash. So far, no guard and no psychiatric staff at Oak Ridge have been charged with a criminal or in civil offense. It's about time they were. There are still no public and independent investigations or public hearings into Oak Ridge, the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, that's CAMH, or any other Ontario psycho prison. The abuses, deaths, hospital and ministry cover-ups, public apathy, and silence continue, all in the name of mental health. Well, that was my essay on Oak Ridge, friends. I hope you got something out of it. It won't be the last, I'm sure. As you know, the last time I was on air here on CCKLN, I talked about the tragic death of 22-year-old Kulme Agane, and his sister's campaign, Uba Agane, to get some justice. Apparently, there will be an inquest. Kulme died last March 1st, just to recapitulate very, very fast, while he was in solitary shortly after given a megadose of psychiatric drugs and being beaten by the guards. But I can't say any more about it, friends, because there's an inquest is about, will take place, but we don't know the date, and I don't doubt that there'll be some civil action, a lawsuit by the Agane family. And at that time, of course, I will bring you what happens at the inquest and my own take. So, Uba, if you're listening, stay strong. We are going to get some justice for your brother one way or the other. He, like hundreds and hundreds of others, have been and still are seriously mistreated, abused, and I think torture is the right word, tortured at Oak Ridge and other dungeons called psychiatric facilities. Now, there is going to be an inquest, friends, coming up on Tuesday. I hope some of you are free into the recent death of Ryan Coulter, C-O-U-L-T-E-R, in Toronto. Mr. Coulter, 42, died October 23rd of 2007 while in custody, while he was locked up in CAMH, Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto. By the way, if someone dies while they're locked, while under the custody, of the police, and is an involuntary patient, I believe, there has to be an inquest. Although the Coroner's Act still leaves it up to the coroner, his discretion or her discretion, to call an inquest in the psychiatric survivors who don't survive, who die in the in psychiatric facilities. That was challenged, but it was overturned, unfortunately. But get this, in sharp contrast, if a prisoner dies while locked up, an inquest is automatic. So there's certainly a discrimination going on in the Coroner's Act against psychiatric prisoners. Now, just for a couple brief announcements to wind up, I think, and there is going to be, I mentioned this before, friends, an international conference called Psych Out. It's a conference for organizing resistance against psychiatry, and CAPA, the Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault, is involved, and I'll give you more info, but for now, I'll just say we need some money to put this on. It'll be a huge conference coming up in May of next year, and we desperately need some money, so we're going to put on a fundraising event. It's scheduled for June 15th. It will mainly involve, or at least partly involve, an art sale. So if you've got art, this is a call to psychiatric. It's a call for art for the fundraiser on June 15th to psychiatric survivors and allies. We welcome you to donate a piece of your art for a fun night of fundraising. January 15th at Trinity St. Paul, 427 Bloor Street West, for the Psych Out Conference being held, as I just mentioned. Ontario Institute, conference will be held at the Ontario Institute for Studies and Education at the University of Toronto on May 7th and 8th. The purpose of this global conference is to provide a forum for psychiatric survivors, mad people, activists, scholars, students, radical professionals, and artists from around the world to come together and share experiences of organizing against psychiatry. Artists will help raise money for an important and groundbreaking conference and, of course, help educate society and fight for social change. Please submit a photograph, and this is important. Please submit a photograph of your art with a short bio to, and here's the email address. If you got a pen or pencil, please write this down. If you're an artist or you know artists, psychout, psychout @gmail.com. And I'll repeat that. Psychout, psychout @gmail.com, no later than December 11th. So you've got a couple weeks. Years in solidarity. This is from the fundraising committee for Psych Out Art. And if you want information about this important international conference, here's the website. https://ocs.library.utoronto.ca/index.php/psychout. So I'll repeat it. I know it's long, but please bear with me. It is an important site. So that's ocs.library.utoronto.ca/index.php/psychout. So I think we're going to end up, can we, do we have some of that, Kristen, anything, a bit more of our brother, Phil Oakes, playing a bit more on the ride out here. And I want to say special thanks to you, Kristen, Susie, Mark, the whole crew for making this possible, teching, and because we couldn't do it without their help. And I will be on, as I said before, 2 weeks hence. Please tune in on December 11th, that's a Friday at 6:30. I'll be back. As you know, I'm on twice a month now. Anti-Psychiatry with Radio is on twice a month, the second and fourth Friday. Tune in, stay strong, and make sure you do whatever it takes to stay out of the bin of these psychoprisms. And now we'll go out with our brother, Phil Oakes.
Good evening. This is my first evening in Vancouver. I've been to Canada, Toronto, Montreal, where all the extremists live.